Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
So here we are with a special version of Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton. There's Mark Clifton sitting right there.
I'm just going to be quiet today.
Well, oh, come on. The reason you're going to be quiet is because we have a guest who has a lot to say.
I know.
And
actually, this is number two of our takes. We tried to do one a moment ago, and I messed it up. I started talking, and I said, you know what? Dan, you do this for a living,
no.
And we have a wonderful guest. And I want you to be the one that picks this up. Our listeners will benefit from your wisdom of interviewing.
Oh, brother.
And they'll benefit from my ability to sit here and listen.
Yeah,
boy. So that's what we're going to
laying
do.
Laying it on thick now. Our guest today is Jim Eliff, who is the founder of Christian Communicators Worldwide. And that is something that you're actively involved in now.
Mm-hmm.
But along with that... we're going to talk about both, if that's okay, about Christian Communicators Worldwide, as well as the type of church ministry that you're involved in, because there's lots of things that we can learn from that, I believe, for what we call the normative church, you know, being the church building and a congregation comes from all different locations. And so let's talk about, first of all, the ministry that you have with Christian Communicators Worldwide. What is that?
Yeah, we're Bible teachers. So right now there are just two of us, but we've had more. And we travel and teach the Bible, often lead things called Bible intensives, where we just take a passage of Scripture and work on it for 2 days without any helps but the Bible.
Mm. So do you go to churches, and is it like a seminar or what?
I'll be, for instance, next week I'll be a couple of days with pastors who are coming in here to a retreat center. Then just a week or so after that, I'll be in South Arkansas with pastors. We've been doing that for a few years, going way down in South Arkansas, El Dorado, way down there.
Yep.
And meeting with pastors and leaders, and just going through a text of Scripture for 2 days, nonstop.
And so, what's the purpose or the motivation behind that?
Well, both learning the text that's there, which is no little thing, and then learning the methodology of really, really doing a good inductive Bible study.
Oh, tremendous!
Yeah.
So you're basically teaching teachers.
Yeah, that's right. It basically it does have a big effect on how people study the Bible themselves and observe the text, pay attention, you know, to what's in there and figure out the structure and so forth. So it's just a, we think, very helpful, and many people have just picked this up and started to incorporate it in their churches in various ways.
One of the things I've appreciated about Jim over the years is the plethora of resources that are available to churches at no cost. Wonderful things like bulletin inserts that are really thought-provoking and motivational, amazing blog posts and all kinds of things. So I really want to encourage you to take a look at some of the resources that Christian Communicators Worldwide offers. I've used them on many occasions, and they've been very helpful to me and my ministry. So it is a wonderful organization that provides a lot of great material, including something we will look at today, wonderful little book on the Lord's Supper as a meal. But I'll be quiet and let you get back to your job.
And we'll put the website in the show notes, so you can check that out, ccwtoday.org, and you can go and do some research for yourselves and find out some resources that might be extremely beneficial for you. The other side of Jim Eliff is a ministry that we would normally call house church. Do you call it that?
We don't mind using that word, the church that meets in the house. Right. That's fine with us. We think the Bible uses that kind of terminology.
And you, what prompted you to start doing that? Which was what, 20 some odd years ago?
Longer than that when I first thought about it. And so it's a network of house churches. And years ago I was pastoring in Orlando, Florida. And we good things happened. Eventually, it was a tough church and a huge building. And when I got there, just a minimal number of people scattered around, and it was a big challenge. And we began to think about what God could do with churches. And I was young. We were just newly married, actually. And I wrote down eventually on a piece of paper that I still have the very outline of the things we're doing today.
Really?
So many years ago, that was something. And then as I began to develop more understanding of the Bible, you know, we just began to flesh that out, fill that in, and understand more and more. And when the opportunity came here 22 years ago, well, then we began, and it's been such an amazing, I want to say experiment in a way, because I wasn't used to doing it this way, but it's really been an amazing thing.
One of the things that I've been intrigued by is that you meet on Sunday evenings, not Sunday mornings.
Yes, most of the groups do, right.
Right.
Occasionally they'll meet another time.
And that means that Jim and I are preacher's kids, all right? Uh-huh. So we grew up in Southern Baptist churches where we went to church more days than we didn't. And by going to church, I mean we were in the building more days than we weren't. And Sunday, we were in church all day. I mean, Sunday school, morning worship. My dad had two services, and then get back at 5 o'clock for youth choir, and then church training, and then we'd go to church, and it wore out by Sunday night. We're just totally exhausted. And the idea that you can gather as a church on the Lord's Day and yet have most of the day a time to relax, to rest, to contemplate the week, to prepare your heart to go meet with believers that evening. I've got to tell you, as old as I'm getting, in fact, as we do this podcast in just a couple of weeks, I'm going to try a first evening worship service out near where I live, sort of modeled on what Jim has done. And another member of our team, Jimbo Stewart, started doing this last Sunday evening with some great success, reaching some folks. So I think Jim's onto something here. That's just my opinion.
I think the Lord was onto it
a long
time ago.
I appreciate that. So you meet primarily
in homes.
Homes on Sunday evenings.
Absolutely. Primarily it's on Sunday evenings. And let's say it may vary per group, because the groups have the leadership of their pastors and they work together in what works best for them. But usually, let's say 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we're together usually 4 or 5 hours.
Really?
Yeah. So that includes a meal called the Lord's Supper.
Hmm. And you referred to it earlier as a network of churches. How does that network operate?
Yeah, you know, in the New Testament, you find the church of the city, and then you'll find the terminology of the house church. And so almost every scholar will agree with what I'm saying here, that the church would have the name of the city, but also would talk about the church or the gathering that's in the house, right? So that's what we have, just that simple idea that we have multiple house churches of one actual church, larger church. We'd love to have it the church of the city, but that's never going to happen again like it was in the New Testament, obviously.
And each individual group is autonomous?
Yeah, it's sort of like states' rights, you know. We have like the early America that we heard about and read about. You know, we really have a lot that we do. These are legitimate pastors. I mean, they're really solid guys. And they have freedom to do things. If they want to have a retreat or do anything or meet a different way, they could meet in the park if they want to. You know, it's a beautiful day. They can, as long as they're doing the things that need to be done. And then the elders are meeting together every week at 5:30 in the morning, by the way.
Really?
On Wednesdays. So, you know, we're really in touch with each other, the whole. And then we have some things that we come together as a whole. So every 6 weeks, we all pull together in a retreat center. Mm. And we have more of a typical meeting. You know, all the instrumentalists will be up there, and there'll be more of a message or two or sometimes three messages from the elders, or, you know, it just, and So that's more of a typical thing.
So what is the approximate size of each? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What is the approximate size of each congregation?
Yeah, we're pushing the edge on most all of these right now, but we're in the 30s in most of them. So, it's ideal to kind of, it's ideal to be less than that probably, but it's a whole family counting the children. And, you know, the last one I led was just having babies like crazy, and the last were twins, you know. So we're adding that way, and other families coming in and so forth. So it can get up into the 30s really easily, depending on the house size, really, is the main consideration.
Now, you referred to earlier as you meet around mid-afternoon, and you actually have a meal.
Yes, after. Yeah.
And you've written a book called The Lord's Supper is a Meal. And we're going to put that information also in the show notes, because we are really recommending this book. Because and we want to talk a little bit about that.
Sure.
First of all, and then I'm just going to kind of turn this over to Mark, because you guys have talked about this a lot. Where did the title come from for the book?
Well, a lot of people don't read the book. I want them to get the message right off.
It's in the title. That's what it's
in the title.
Plain.
I don't know. It's a lot of books have crazy titles and nobody knows what they're about, and they don't do what they need to do sometimes. So we wanted to be really obvious here. Yeah. So that's a shocking thing to a lot of. I mean, it's not shocking to anybody who's a Bible student. Everybody knew the early church ate a meal, but where did it go to, you know?
Yeah, as I said, we grew up in church, and both he and I, dads were pastors, and and you were too. Dan's dad was a missionary in Honduras, so you grew up in it, and the Lord's Supper was something we did every quarter, if we remembered it. Once in a while, we'd get to church on Sunday, and some deacon would say, "Oh, this is supposed to be Lord's Supper.
Time
well, we'll
get
do
the
it
trays
next
down.
Week."
Yeah,
that's right. Go get the trays, and you go downstairs in the fellowship hall, and you dig up the trays you haven't seen in 3 months, and that's you right. wash out the glasses, and you get the little tiny wafer, and at the end, and you cover it up at the front of the sanctuary with a white cloth, and
which is a deacon's responsibility.
That was a deacon's
responsibility. They go to deacon school for
that's
that.
That's right. That's why you
actually,
got deacons
to learn that.
And they go to deacon school and they learn to fold it like it's the flag at the president's death, you know.
Yeah.
And,
which was to keep the flies off. That's why it's there.
Tom Rainer told me that. He exactly. said the reason for the covering was to keep the flies off.
Yeah. Well, it is on the mission field, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's really a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, and I'm not making light of it. That's how I took communion my whole life.
Absolutely.
And it meant a great deal to us. But it's like growing up, I thought that was the only way you did it. And then, you know, realizing you're right, the early church, they didn't do that. It was at their mealtime.
That's right.
And so when I heard about Jim and his congregation taking the Lord's Supper as part of a meal. Now, some of you listening have done that. You've had a fellowship meal. You'll do it once in a while, and you'll have Lord's Supper around the tables. You know, I've experienced that too. It's been very meaningful. But yeah, that's kind of where we are.
Yeah.
So talk to us about, I'll get it back to Dan. But
yeah, it was my experience, of course, for years and years. And I don't either want to make fun of that. Because there, you know, you meet with the Lord, and great things can happen. And there's something really missing. And one of the things that's really missing is the thing that is one of the great purposes of the Lord's Supper, and that is fellowship.
Okay.
So it's like the most independent thing we do, borrowed from Catholics, actually, the way we do it.
Okay.
And so we're more Catholic about a few things, actually, than we realize. And it's a very independent thing. And the idea of the Lord's Supper was a meal built, people coming together solely because Jesus Christ died. You know, his body was broken, his blood was spilt, so that we can have communion with each other and with him. And so we're doing that, you know, we're actually doing that. We're not, so the iconic word for fellowship in the Bible is meal.
Hmm.
You know, it's what we're going to do. Jesus talked about it in heaven. You know, we're going to gather around with Abraham, Isaac, or in the future world, I'll say, wherever mm-hmm. that is. Yeah. In the future world, we'll gather at the table with them, because that's just what it was. That was the fellowship place in that period of time. And I think still in a way today, isn't it? I mean, we invite people over to eat a meal because sure. we want to have some fellowship with them, meaningful talk with them, conversation with them, and that's the way to do it. And so, the very most major element, I think, outside of remembering, is the fellowship that is talked about seriously and abused, actually, in 1 Corinthians 11. But it's a very, very critical issue. And I can just say from my heart, because I travel, like you, in many churches, and there is a major problem with fellowship.
What happens?
Starvation for fellowship, frankly.
Mm-hmm. What happens during the meal?
Mm-hmm. Well, we just relate, and often it can be. It doesn't. It's not a prescribed thing to do.
It's not ritualistic.
Not at all.
Yeah.
No. It's not. It's not ceremonial or ritualistic. Although at the beginning of the meal, we can do this different ways. We can break into the middle of a meal or whatever. But we're going to highlight the elements that to the early church were normative in a banquet, and really in the bread, the case of the bread, it was normative in every meal because that was their utensil, mm. right?
Okay.
The bread. Yeah. So the flat bread, you know. And so, and if it were a banquet, it would typically have wine, or we use grape juice. We can talk about levels right. of fermentation if you want to.
No, we're not going to talk about that.
But they're all fermenting some level, so yeah. we don't care about that. It's just that, you know, so you have that, and these are representative of the blood and the body of Jesus Christ, who is the basis of our union.
So you're saying in the first century, when the church would gather for fellowship, there would always be a meal. They would come together with a meal. And the normal meal would include the flat bread and the drink.
And the highlighting of that, the showcasing of that.
Okay.
So what we do is our habit would be different men in the congregation will... We'll gather in the kitchen, stand around all the food. The elements of the Lord's Supper will be there on the table with the food, to be taken with the food, as it would have been in the early church. I mean, they would have used the bread, you know, or it would have been on the table. And so we just kind of go through the potluck line, right? And
right.
and we take that with us. But he's going to say something. One of the men in the church is going to take some time to usually open the scripture. We'll often sing something around together. It's good singing around that, you know, all together facing each other, and pray together just for a few minutes of showcasing, pointing out what's going on. If somebody there doesn't understand, I mean, a house church is not like we think of our churches as believers' meetings.
Okay.
So it's not like a walk-in type situation. Mm-hmm. So most of the people are going to understand. However, we do have guests and, you know, they'll come with friends and so forth. If they're seekers, we invite them to come. And we'll explain things a little further. But otherwise, our people know who takes those mm-hmm. elements and who doesn't. Right? So the children and not believers really are not partaking of that bread, that special bread that we bless, the bread that we bless, the cup that we drink, you know, that the Bible talks about is special because we're trying to represent something. Symbolize something.
We're going to, by the way, we're going to this is a two-parter
absolutely
interview, and okay. so we're going to carry on a few more of some of the details a little bit, but I'm curious, as we're getting close to running out of time here, would you talk a little bit about, in a ranking system, is the meal the apex of the meeting together, or
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. When we come together, obviously in any gathering of believers, what Christ has to say to us is the most important thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have, which we can talk about if we ever discuss this house church idea.
But we'll
talk about the idea. Yeah. But we're together, let's say, for an hour and a half. Sometimes it doesn't make a difference how long it lasts. It may be 2 hours. And in that time, we're going to be sharing a lot of things. Different men will be teaching things. People will be sharing their testimony about this, their need. They'll be confessing sin. They may sing a song. We'll sing different songs, pray together about different people's needs, lots of different ministry to each other, just in a living room. And then we'll have the meal. And having it last, in our case, works best, so we can just hang out then for a long time together and continue. So people in that, on that table, may engage in serious conversations about Bible issues. That's pretty typical to see happening. But it's also a time to find out about our families, or somebody's having questions about raising their children, or maybe pulling somebody aside if you need to. A lot of pastoral work can be done in an afternoon like that. It's a really economy of time for you to actually be there with your people. So we see a lot of things happening then in that afternoon and before we leave. And then finally we're off and saying our goodbyes. Very loving, very comfortable, very intimate.
I think it's important for us to realize, too, that these is five or six of these congregations that gather in homes every week, and 30 or so people in each one.
Right.
So totally it's about 150, and then every 6 weeks you get together in one location.
Mm-hmm, yeah, we come together at a retreat center.
Okay.
And we bless the Presbyterians because we meet at the Presbyterian Retreat Center.
Oh, you do?
And we use a fireplace room that's really a comfortable room. And we also eat a meal there, but we're having a more typical meeting. So sometimes we've had just had two or three pastors speaking, and sometimes it'll be one, or sometimes a missionary's in town, and he'll be sharing.
Well, Dan, I think...
You know, that sort of thing.
I think what really intrigued me about the conversations I've had and with Jim about this and been thinking about it, again, growing up, as all three of us did in Southern Baptist life, worship was always great, and then the fellowship was always great.
Yeah.
But they were totally divided, even in two different rooms.
Yeah.
So you'd have worship, and then it's like, okay, now we're going to go down and have a fellowship meal afterward. And I love the idea of it all being together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How sweet is that? Now, that can more easily happen in a normative-sized church than in a church of 3,000.
So you're speaking my language. That's true.
It
can happen. And it doesn't really, it's not a matter of a building.
Mm-hmm.
That can happen in any building.
Yes.
A house is a building, and it can happen in another place. A house naturally feels right for it.
Yes.
But sometimes you have to overcome some things.
Let's talk about that in the next podcast.
I will.
That's right.
We'll get into that. I think there's some things here that a church, half of our Southern Baptist churches, Jim, will have less than 50 on Sunday morning.
Oh, yes.
And there's a lot of things we can learn about how to do church well with 50 people. And you don't do it as well when you have 50 and you try to make it look like and function like a church of 250.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that in the next podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do that. But I have one more question as we close.
Yeah.
When do you do the announcements? It's kind of important.
That is. When do we give the church announcements?
That's right. Well,
we've been talking with Jim Eliff, who is the founder of Christian Communicators Worldwide. And obviously involved in, you called it the house of where believers meet, or
could be different names. That's right. The church meeting in the home.
That's it. Church meeting in the home. And we're going to continue that discussion, Jim. Thank you so much for spending time with us today and talking a lot about something that we've all thought about and wondered about. And you can give us some more insight. We'll do that on the next podcast. Thank you so much for listening. It's been a pleasure to share this special Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton program. And we're going to continue, tell you a little bit more about the book. We have some other things that we want to talk to Jim about. He doesn't know yet.
He doesn't.
But we're going to spring it on
him
later.
We are.
Yeah. Talk to you later.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.